Hey, so I'm Amy. I'm the host of the Woman in Comedy podcast, and I get to chat with amazing women in the industry, behind the scenes, up on the stage, all about their journey, and a little bit about me. So I work as a programmer for the Woman in Comedy Festival here in Manchester. I also work as a progression booker and look after Beat the Frog for the Frog and Bucket, and work as an artist liaison. Is pretty much me, and I've worked in comedy since 2013. And I started this podcast because I just wanted to talk to amazing women, really, and just have a platform for us to chat and just be ourselves and talk about what it is to be in this amazing, magical, sometimes hard industry. So sit back, grab a brew and a Becky, and enjoy the podcast. Chatting with Katie Green. She came and visited us and did a trial spot at the Frog and Bucket, and I was lucky enough to sit down with her and chat about her journey from the States over to the UK. So sit back, get a brew, have a cup of biscuits, and enjoy Katie Green.
Pushed the wrong button before.
It's a learning process, isn't it?
It is a learning process.
Really big learning process.
So what made you like get into podcasting?
Well, I just feel like it was a nice way to do something where to kind of like show myself to people in a different way, you know. And I wanted to have one big reason why I wanted to have a podcast was I moved to the UK and feel really lonely because it's a hard place to meet people.
Yeah.
Right. And
especially in London.
London is really, it's hard. I was having this conversation the other day, and it feels so hostile. It's like, especially now, is the lack of community really, you see it more, and especially when it gets cold, I think.
Yeah.
Men just yell at me all the time, and I'm like, fuck you. Like, I'm just trying to survive like everybody else.
Yeah.
And like just random men just, yeah. Like the other day I was walking and this guy was like, can you move please? I'm like, we're both on the fucking pavement. I don't understand. Where do I move?
Yeah.
Can you tell other people to move? Why don't you tell them to move?
Yeah. Because everyone's so busy. Like everyone's so busy. Going somewhere.
Yeah.
And like I feel like moving up here, I am such a fast walker from living in London.
Yeah.
That people are slow and I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
But I'm like, oh, you're in the north. You don't need to rush.
But it's also like people, just like the lack of community. You don't care about anyone else. You don't care what other people are doing. It's really just awful. And so it is nice coming up north because it's a slower pace and people are more friendly and...
Yeah.
But yeah, sometimes I'm like, why did I move here? Why did I move to London?
But do you find it's much more community-based back? Because like, your family is in Los Angeles, is that right?
So my family lives in the Bay Area, in San Francisco, and or a suburb. And like all my family live there. Most of my family live there.
California, sorry, that's the state. Yeah. Oh my God, that's embarrassing.
No, that's all right. No,
I'm really good with geography as well. And I literally just like, LA, that's the state, right?
Well, no, I did live in LA for a bit, yeah.
There you go. That was my research that I did prior.
Yes, I did live in LA. But even then, it's only a five, six hour drive from San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So whenever I'd get a bit homesick, I'd just drive home.
Yeah.
And also, that was the same time zone, whereas here, it's 8 hours difference. Yeah. I've got to wait till people wake up. I've got to I've got to go with their timing. Mm-hmm. So it makes it very, I think you don't realize, I think when you move somewhere new, you got that honeymoon phase for a bit where you're like, yay, I'm in the UK, I'm in London, I'm so excited. Mm. And then you start settling in and it's like, you kind of notice the things, like the things that you took for granted.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's interesting to me being over here. I've been here 5 years now and just meeting new Kiwis off the boat.
Yeah.
And they're just like, oh my God, I'm so excited. Like, I had to leave New Zealand. I had to leave. And I'm like, man, yeah, you just wait until winter.
It happens. The winter hits so hard.
It's so hard.
But also I feel like it's the second winter.
Yeah.
First winter, you're like, this is so fun. We didn't have this.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like California doesn't have, we don't have.
True.
The rain, like, well, we have rain, but not like crazy that it is now.
Mm.
And we don't have snow and we don't have like this, like, I've never needed a coat. I remember having, like, you must have had this, having to buy an actual big coat for the first time.
Well, no, there's a misconception about New Zealand that we're really hot and tropical, but that's not true.
Is it not?
No, we have winters as well.
Just as cold as here?
Yeah, it can get cold and we have snow in the South Island, but we actually have four seasons. Only in the bottom of the South Island would it be like here, but majority of New Zealand, we have proper four seasons, where here it's like winter is 5 months long.
Yeah.
Like it's winter now.
It's winter. Oh, yeah, it's winter now.
Like that's it. And we'll be like this until March. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're just having a cup of tea as well, which is just really hot. So just,
It is.
You might hear like a spoon tinkle.
Take that out.
A cup of tea. That's one good thing about the English is a cup of tea.
That is nice.
You know, the States is very coffee.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. The cup of tea is nice. That's also quite community oriented though too. I feel like it's not as, if you don't have English family.
Yeah. Cup of tea. If you're feeling blue, especially in the North, if you're feeling blue, you get a cup of tea.
Yeah.
Let's have a cup of tea and talk about it. It's like a confessional.
Yeah, it's so interesting, isn't it?
It is. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So London, so you're trying to find that community.
Yeah, I think, I got distracted.
We got distracted with the tea. And then
we did, but that's the big reason why I started my podcast, is to just kind of force myself to like have that community again.
Mm. Yeah.
And talk to people and... Even if they're my friends, most of them are my friends, but just forcing myself to, because I went through a stage of just working and going home and not talking to people. And I think it was because I was just really sad. And then I really had to be like, oh, you've lost your sense of belonging in a place.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I came over, I was like so happy and like, yay. And then the process of getting a visa is so stressful, so strenuous. Yeah. And then you feel very like so much like an other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think the emotional toll that took just really made me feel like secluded.
Yeah.
Despite so many people going through it.
Yeah. And what made you come to the UK? Because obviously the States have like a booming comedy industry.
Yeah. I was in LA doing it and I just couldn't find myself. And I wanted to go to a place where I could figure out my voice a bit more.
Yeah.
LA, I just felt like it was so, it's LA and New York, you're massive.
Yeah.
And everyone's the best at what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really easy to lose yourself or to try to be something you're not. So I wanted to come to a scene where I could discover myself, I guess.
Do you think also too, like, because there's not many people from the States over here, that, you know, you're hearing different voices and it's a different experience?
Yeah, I think a bit of that.
Plus, it's a different comedy style.
Such a different comedy style.
So different. Like, a lot of people over here don't really get the North American comedy.
I think it's a really difficult adjustment, and I think you don't realize it until you've done a few shows. You can always tell the Americans when they first get over, they're like, oh, you haven't gigged outside of the U.S. But, it's nice. It's nice being different somewhere, but at the same time, it is, the novelty wears off on the being different, because I'm not as different as, because I've lived here A lot of my observations now are more so like, I guess, American living in the UK than it would have been when I first came over here.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that comparison comedy.
Yeah.
Of the two.
Yeah. But also, I've always liked, I'd like to move to New York, but for me, London as a place to live in general, I always liked, like when you're talking outside of comedy, like I find the UK to be a lot safer. And if I were to settle down, I would like to settle down in the UK.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I think so.
Yeah.
It's really easy to look back at home and think, wow, it was just, I miss home a lot.
Mm.
But it is more dangerous, and it is, the healthcare is a big problem. And
yeah.
So a lot of things go into play.
Yeah. And do you find like the industry over here is a little more open, easier to get around because it's such a small little... Yeah, the industry, do you find it over here? Because obviously you're traveling for long, like if you're doing gigs, you know, five, like people complain here about traveling for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Which that is nothing in the States.
Well, I think yes and no. I think the industry, I think it's easier doing cities here perhaps, but I think the barrier of having to learn the different culture is kind of puts you at a, you have to learn that first.
Yeah.
It's easier traveling around here because the size, but I suppose I don't think I would have liked to be a road comic in the US. I think that never really interested me.
Okay. So what did kind of interest you?
I just wanted to learn about comedy. I wanted to keep on doing it. I always wanted to live in a big city. Mm. So LA was my choice, but New York would have been a second option. But I didn't want to go on the, like, middle America never really interested me. Maybe one day, but a lot of comics make money on the road. And
I've also heard that they don't really book you unless you've been doing comedy for like 10 years.
Well, that's the kind of the standard of what they think a comic finds himself at, like 10 years it takes to build up to your first hour. And that's the style is very different out there because of the comparison with 10 years for your first hour, whereas here, like, people are doing their first hour in 10 months.
Yeah, 6 months.
Yeah, yeah. And the whole Edinburgh Fringe route is so different. We don't have anything like that. No one's doing a whole hour every year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just different. The 10-year standard I don't not disagree with, because it does take a long time to figure out who you are in your voice, what you want to do in the industry.
Yeah.
Like, when I had left LA, I had a few, like, writing job options or, like, a few... talking to a few people in wanting me to, like, maybe try out writing for television, but I don't think that really didn't really interest me at that moment in time. So I think I just wanted to really figure out who I was and what I wanted.
Yeah. And what better place than to go to London?
Yeah, it's really, because you kind of have a, when you move to a new country, you have that the novelty of moving to a new place in general and having that perspective. I'm also really big on culture. I love learning about different places. I mean, I have British family. My grandpa's from the UK.
Oh, cool.
But I do, it's so fascinating seeing what people laugh at, what people don't, what's different, what's the same, like what you can learn from each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about the UK, England mostly, is that every little town is completely different.
Yeah, that's so hard for me, though.
Is it?
Yeah.
Just like, getting used to the, like, how Liverpool is completely different to Manchester and...
Yeah, or, like, cultural references that's, like... Because I don't want to be... My biggest pet peeve when I see Americans come over and they're just using references where you're like,
yeah,
no, what? No, nobody has Target over here.
Yeah.
You don't either change the reference or know that there's no Target. They don't, when they find out on stage, they're like, oh, you guys don't have Target? Or like things like, or like some super specific. Whereas I hate being that person if I'm in Liverpool and I don't know something about Liverpool or, and obviously it happens, but I hate the bigger cities not as much because I feel like I have a general understanding, but sometimes like places like Portsmouth, I'm like, I don't know much about Portsmouth.
But you'd actually be surprised how many UK comics from London come up to Manchester and talk about the tube, and they'd be shocked at the amount of people who would prefer to go to Europe than to London from up here.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, heaps of people are like, I've never been to London, but I've been all to Europe.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. That's interesting. It always happens in real time. You say something, you're like, fuck, I've already said it.
Yeah.
I haven't made the change. Yeah.
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 Even coming up when acts were coming over to Aotearoa, like to New Zealand, like they were saying stuff about the UK and we're like, mate, we're nothing like England.
Yeah.
We don't know what you're talking about.
But certain things take so long to really understand the culture and like your perspective on it as well.
Yeah.
And I find that stuff fascinating. I find the, like, because I come from an academic background.
Mm.
I like to study. I did. But my academia was basically in culture. I mean, it was mostly so vague. And so, but I just loved learning about different culture. And so I went to like a public university. So it was nice because I got a lot of funding for it. And there was a lot of funding available. And my first master's, I was very blessed to have been, like, got a lot of scholarships. But it was, I found it fascinating just learning about different people and I think what makes them laugh is that's like kind of like the pinnacle of learning about a place. You're like, if I can, that's like the furthest point of the culture because...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I find it so fascinating.
Well, also, too, because, like, going on holiday is different to living in a different country.
Yeah.
Like, going on holiday is like Disneyland. You're seeing the romance side of a country, but actually living and breathing every day, like living in London and catching that tube every day, that is an experience of every day.
Yeah.
And dealing with rush hour traffic, not being able to get on the central line because there are lines and lines of people. And you're like, what time am I going to get home?
Yeah, and it's also like that feeling. I remember learning how to get the bus. That's such a feeling of like, I live here now.
Yeah.
I know what bus to take and where to stand.
Yeah, and you're not allowed to talk to the bus driver.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I know. That's, oh God. I still do so much where I get away with my accent. I use my accent so much.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because we're really talkative people, Kiwis. Like, we're proper, like, we don't
Americans as well.
We don't have plastic covering over our bus drivers.
Yeah.
That's really hard to, no, I know it sounds silly, but that's something I'm not used to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, normally you're just like, oh, hi, bus driver.
Yeah. Yeah. The buses at home are not as good.
Okay.
But I talk to everybody and it's quite jarring for people.
Yeah.
Too many people I talk to, I'd say, on an average day.
Yeah.
And people are like, why are you don't have to do that. And I'm like, well, how are they doing though?
Yeah. I'm very smiley. Smiley. And so people think that's a bit odd.
Yeah.
Like, why are you no one smiles.
Yeah. I also like address things on the tube or
same.
Like I'm sometimes when I rush in, you know, like when the doors are closing and you just get in.
Yeah.
sometimes I'll be like, I made it. And I'm like, people are just like, what the fuck? I'm like, oh my, can we celebrate this win for me?
Yeah.
Like, whereas at home, people be like, woo.
Yeah.
You know?
You guys like a woo.
We love to woo.
Yeah. I've watched a lot of, like, our shows from the States and love a woo.
We love woos.
Yes. That's up there with a laugh.
Yeah. We love celebrating things.
Yeah, you do.
Like, the smallest things we celebrate.
Do you know what? I lived in Canada for a year and it was so refreshing because I'm an actor as well. And like back home or in Australia or over here, you tell people you're an actor and they're like, oh yeah, what have you been in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, you haven't been on TV, so you're not successful. But you say that in North America and they're like, oh my God, go you.
Yeah.
You have a dream, go you. And you're just like, something could happen.
Yeah. Everything's so optimistic. Everyone's so supportive at home. Everyone is. And like I was just in LA and I hadn't been back for quite a while. I think since I left 5 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
And God, the optimism. Everyone's happy for you. Everyone's like smiling. And I'm like, the weather helps.
Oh, yeah.
But everyone is like so optimistic.
Yeah.
And it's nice to be around because you're like, yeah, maybe I'll be optimistic too.
Yeah.
And then you go to London and it's like everyone's, you feel like you have to complain as well.
Yeah.
It's a very, the culture shift is really.
Yeah. And like we have got quite a comedy community back home and here, especially in London, because I used to work in London as well. But like comedians are just going. Just gone. They're doing like 5 gigs a night.
Yeah.
And out. Boom, boom.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, where's that community? That community. Especially for their open micers. You know what I mean? To be able to watch and see pros and have pros watch their set and be like, you know, hey.
Yeah.
You know that joke you just did? Maybe you could.
Yeah, I feel like the community is in this, San Francisco had a good community. LA was hard to find community.
Yeah.
London, I feel like I forced myself to have community. I forced myself to make friends with people.
Yeah.
To hang and.
Yeah.
But the longer you're in it, you're just like, oh, I've got. Yeah. I feel like I gotta go here.
Yeah. I think that is one good thing about London, though. It does force you to make new friends. It forces you out of your comfort zone because it would make or break your kind of city, and it does force you to meet people, to get out of your own comfort zone.
Yeah.
I go, right.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to make the effort.
For sure. I think you have to really, every time you go to a new city, especially if there's a big leap.
Mm.
No, I'd say even if there's not, every new city, you have to take your ego aside. Like,
yeah.
I meet a lot of people in London and they're like, oh, yeah, I feel like they complain about things, or they complain about they've not made friends, or they've not gotten into certain gigs, or, and I'm like, well, I did it. You can do it.
Yeah.
You've got to put yourself out of your comfort zone. People are like, how did you get into that club? I'm like, I used to hang out.
Yeah.
All the time.
Sergi Polo is probably the best example. I used to work at Angel Comedy.
Yes.
And he, Barry Ferns, who is one
love,
of the,
love
Barry.
Love Barry.
He was like, we've got this guy. He's a comedian. He's from Spain and he's going to tech. I was like, okay. And he just came every day, volunteered his time, sat. I mean, we didn't really need a tech because it's literally like lights up, lights down. But he was there every day. He helped.
Yeah.
And he just watched comedy until one day one of the acts was running a bit late and I looked at Masood and I was like, do you think Sergi could go up and do 5 right now? And Masood was like, yeah. And I just was like, hey, Sergi, do you want to go up and do 5? And he's like, what, now? I was like, yeah.
I love that.
And I just forced him on stage.
Yeah.
But he was there.
Yeah, Sergi's also great for the he now does Comedy Por Favor, which is the Spanish-speaking night at Angel.
Yeah.
And I mean, Angle itself is just a great community. I think it's also, it's a kind of safe haven for a London staple of really supportive comics. Barry does a great job in making that community. But Sergio does Comedy Por Favor now, and me doing it in Spanish as well, it's so difficult. And every time I get off stage, I'm like, I cannot believe he learned a whole language through doing stand-up comedy. It's insane.
Yeah.
I'm like, he just sucks props to him. It's just, wow.
Yeah.
But.
So how is that doing comedy in a different
language? It's really
fun.
It's really interesting. It's really, it's such a great, it's like, you know, when something is so scary, but really good.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I imagine, I've never done skydiving, but kind of that feeling of like you're pushing yourself so much to do something that's really scary.
Yeah.
And really out of your comfort zone, but it's really rewarding.
Yeah. And also too, like, I'm assuming there's quite a mix. It's obviously people from Spain and people from all over South America living in London. So is it similar to, say, coming up and doing comedy in Manchester, where you have to kind of know the not the jargon, but what's the word?
The slang.
The slang.
It's an interesting case because it, on one hand, you've got, I mean, Sergio sells them out, so you've got 90 people in the room who are all there for one reason to share this one language. But when you go into the demographic, it is predominantly Spanish people because it's mainly his, like, Spanish people from his audience.
Yeah.
And that gets interesting in itself because that's another cultural difference, because I come from a Latino background. So that's very interesting to have that difference, especially with my material and my my perspective.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it kind of is like the American British divide in that same sense.
Yeah. Would you go to Spain and do comedy?
So we did a week, me and a few other comics, Luke Chilton and Soraya, who he does this podcast with.
Yeah.
We went to Barcelona, we stayed at his house, we did a week of shows in Spanish to prepare for the first Comedy Por Favor. And then it was great. It was so scary.
Yeah, to go.
Yeah, but I mean, Sergio's like, you can't tell me because I know. And I'm like, every time I'm like, I cannot believe that's how he learned. Because for me, I'll forget words because my Spanish isn't as good as it used to be.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, he learned English by just translating.
Yeah, yeah.
For the jokes, but yeah.
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 That is amazing, though.
It is cool. But that community and that hanging out, it's so important.
Yeah.
It is so important of the, and you can't, people want to like mainstream their way out of the stuff. And you kind of have to do the things, even if you don't enjoy it, you kind of got to, because I didn't enjoy it. I didn't enjoy hanging out at certain places.
Yeah.
Not all the time. It's scary.
Yeah.
It's really scary being like only one person. And then you meet friends and then you, and then it comes less scary because you go to these places and you know someone.
Yeah.
But you really have to throw yourself out there because otherwise there's no like fast tracking unless you just want to wait for things to happen, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And you have to create your own path.
Yeah.
You know? Have you found it as being a female comedian coming over to a new country? Obviously, because you said you've been here 5 years. You've been here the same time as me, right?
I've been in the UK 3.5 years.
3.5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think I saw you. You at Angel just like before the pandemic.
Yeah.
I remember you performing.
I think I'd just passed, pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
2019.
Yeah, yeah, because I remember.
And this is now
23.
End of 2019.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's 4 years now, is it? I went home for pandemic, half of it.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So. Yeah.
So how have you found that journey, meeting people? Just being a woman in a female comedian trying to path their way in this country when it's still very male dominated.
Well, I came from LA, and so that I learned a lot in LA and also in San Francisco. I learned a lot. I was very young in the San Francisco scene when I started.
Okay.
And it's very difficult being young and naive and in the world of like male comedy. And then, you know, a few things happened in LA and San Francisco that made it difficult for me. So moving to London, I suppose I had more experience under my belt in how to deal with certain issues, I guess.
Yeah.
And so I find the London scene to be more, or the UK scene in general, well, I can't really speak as a whole, but I found in London it was a bit more, people were being held accountable more for certain things.
Yeah.
I find a different, you learn quick about what bookers aren't great with women. You learn firsthand very quickly, but also I remember when I first moved and people were like, okay, be wary of this person.
Yeah.
And note this person or whatever. So, yeah, I found it to be, you kind of, the longer you do comedy, you just build up, you have to build up an armor for certain things.
Yeah.
And you can become a bit like, well, that's just how it is. And which is really annoying. But it kind of forces you to handle things differently, I guess. And and you don't allow certain things to happen. Like in LA, I was pretty naive, and so certain I was in situations that made me stop comedy for quite a long time because I didn't want to go back into those situations. So having had that experience, albeit negative, moving to a new city, you just learn to not have those things happen to you again and try to control it a bit more.
Yeah. And LA is quite a hard place.
Yeah.
In general. I've never been. It's a place I don't actually ever want to go to.
It can be really great, but it is also, every place has bad apples and every place has like toxicity in some way, shape, or form. And if you get, when you're new, you're really susceptible to, you know, men wanting things or whatever.
Yeah, doing the whole like, oh, I could help you.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be able to help you.
Yeah. And it's really, and you've, oh my God, you believe everyone. And I was, I started comedy and I didn't have much life experience. Like I didn't do a lot of things. So I was learning about how to live. I mean, when you start young, you're learning about like life as well as, but like through comedy, which is, people are talking about topics that I didn't know anything about. So I'm learning how to live through this medium, whatever. Don't know if that's the right word. I get words wrong all the time.
Don't worry, I'm dyslexic. And I mean, I made an embarrassing thing at the beginning of the podcast.
Oh my gosh.
No, but I think also too, there's this narrative of being discovered.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I think there's this narrative. I think hopefully it's starting to disappear, but although maybe not because of TikTok, but there is this narrative of being discovered.
Yeah.
And as soon as somebody who's, you know, probably a booker or a great comedian or whatever arts industry you're in or any field, someone who goes, hey, you've got talent, I could help you.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. You think, in your dream in that moment is going, oh my God, this is coming true for me.
Yeah.
This person is going to get me my dream because they care. They think I'm talented, but actually,
yeah,
there's something kind of seedy behind that, which is
well, and you don't realize in the moment.
You don't realize in the moment.
And on the micro level, when you first start, not even just someone discovering you, but someone being like, "That you're really funny."
Yeah.
And it's most, you don't, like now, I can look and see hopefully, I like to think people are learning, and I think that until some male comics do certain things, and you're like, what fucking world are you living in for you to think that's still okay?
Yeah.
But that's another story. So annoying.
Yeah.
But
don't worry, we've really talked about men on this podcast. Yeah. So.
God. But they know they're doing, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like people are asking you out, but in a way that's like comedy adjacent. So yeah. It makes you feel like, oh, someone wants to be my comedy friend.
Yeah.
Somebody believes in me and somebody thinks I'm funny. And
yeah.
I'm like, they weren't listening to you.
No.
They don't care.
Yeah.
They weren't.
Yeah, but it's good for us to talk about this stuff because there's more and more women coming into comedy and you do have that starry eye.
Yeah.
You know, even guys have the starry eyed.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have to talk about these things as women to have that open dialogue so that you can, if you're in that situation, be like, talk to another female comedian, hey, this guy, blah, 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 and they can be like, meh, meh, red flags.
Yeah, be really, really weary, I guess,
Just talk,
hindsight, definitely be weary of certain people doing certain things. Because it was a friend who had told me of a way that was some guy was acting, and it was it was a bit too late because she actually heard him on a podcast say something about I guess the way he goes after newer comics, and it was like, God, it was awful.
Yeah,
because I'm like, oh, because I'm young, I'm naive, and I don't know anything about. It's like that thing if like you feel like you have somebody who believes in you, and you're just like, oh, he's trying to fuck me.
Yeah,
but also he's. It's such a power thing because he's using – they'll be like one level above you and then try to act like they have all the answers. And being new to something, you're like, well, they do have all the answers.
Yeah.
Or they want to help or they – oh, like, wow, I've got a mentor.
Yeah.
I think when you first start as well, you're really dying for somebody to like validate.
Yeah.
Or like be like, I'll help you out.
Yeah.
Or like kind of be
you've made the right choice being a comedian.
Yeah, or be like someone who's willing to like take me under their wing. Mm. And that's kind of, you got to be really careful about that, especially when it's of that kind of dynamic.
Yeah. So I'd always, if anyone is, you know, is listening, that, you know, always have female comedians that you can chat to. Mm-hmm. Our network, put it out there.
Yeah.
Join our network. I don't know if you know
I don't know.
Our network.
No.
So it started with Daisy Earl, Alex Stringer, and Tegan Marlowe. They started it up here because they felt that there wasn't a platform or a safe space for women to chat about the industry.
Oh.
So no industry is on there.
Oh, wow.
So, but it's a safe Facebook page for women to join. And then that way you can put in going, hey, this booker or this comedian, and then people can come back with their advice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a supportive space.
Oh, okay. I got to add that because I've got some inputs.
Yeah,
wow. That's good.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so they're really champion women in safety, which I think is good. I think it's good to have a private page.
It's so good. It's so good. And also, I think it's really important to – because I think when I first started, it was very much so you kind of get that women, there's only one seat at the table for women.
Yeah.
And there's only one spot in the lineup, so you kind of pinned against each other.
Mm.
So it's really important having that community and not being or feeling threatened and wanting everyone to be uplifted and kind of changing the way.
Yeah.
The old system and making it that everyone can be in this place at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's enough seats at the table.
Yeah. 100%. But also like making the seats at the table by not going against each other and kind of and really.
100%. 100%. We definitely need to support each other more, I think. But we got Disney to blame for that, about competing against each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah. God, I love Disney so much. So I hate to.
Oh, do you? You're a big Disney fan.
I'm like annoyingly a bit. I like just certain things.
What's your favorite Disney film?
Well, because the season right now, I'd have to say Coco.
Okay.
But that's just also because I'm Latina, so the representation is very strong. I really love it.
That's the same with me and Moana.
Yeah.
Represent my side of the world. Yeah.
It's really hard not to love it.
Yeah.
But it depends my mood.
Okay.
I love the Pixar movies. I'm big on to.
You know, Robin Hood is actually one of my faves.
Oh, wow.
I always loved it as a kid.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. I love Prince John. I think he's hilarious. And the snake.
Oh, my God. I love that.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I have not seen Robin in so long.
Oh, just when he does the whole mommy. You know, when he's sucking his thumb.
Yes. Oh, God, that's good.
You know, yeah. I just was really into that one. And, of course, The Little Mermaid.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I was 5 when that came out. Oh, wow. So I went to the cinema. It changed my life.
Oh.
Loved it. But, I mean, it's a bit problematic now. Yeah. But, I mean, the new version, the live version, was
very good.
Fixed some of the issues with it, which was great.
I liked,
I thought it was really good.
The Incredibles. Oh, I was big on Pixar.
Brave?
Oh, yeah. I loved Brave.
Oh.
Brave.
I love Brave. It's so underrated, you know.
So, oh, God. She's great.
I love it because she's just like, nah, I don't want to marry anyone.
Yeah. So good.
And it's that mother-daughter relationship, which I think Disney has kind of tried to fix.
Yeah.
The past of the evil stepmom.
I think they're really trying, which is obviously
that's all you
for consumerism.
For.
But like,
oh, well,
at the same time, it is really nice seeing representation.
100%. It is nice. I love it.
Yeah.
I'm like, give me more of it.
I know. Give me more things that I can buy. I love buying things.
Oh, do you?
Yes, but I have to stop because I don't have the income. But I used to love, like, I was really into Harry Potter. And
okay.
I had to stop liking things because I spent too much money on Harry Potter stuff.
Like, I was a bit too old when Harry Potter came out.
Okay.
But I was a teenager, so I was too cool for school to like Harry Potter.
Right.
But which, is it house are you in?
Gryffindor.
Okay.
Yeah, but I feel like every American says that.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you done like the quizzes?
Yes, I've done the quizzes. I've done them all. Pottermore has said I'm Gryffindor.
I did that one and I was Gryffindor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Because obviously I'm not, like I said, I've never read the books.
Yeah.
And when I told some of the people that who are big Harry Potter fans, they were all like, yeah, of course you are. So I didn't know what that meant, but I was like, okay.
Yeah, that's good. That is really good.
Because I felt like everyone wants to be Slytherin.
No, everyone wants to be Gryffindor. Slytherin's like the not as good
one.
See,
the UK, but the British like to be Slytherins.
That makes sense.
That's, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I got really obsessed with Twilight. Shamefully obsessed.
So that's one I never watched or read.
Yeah.
Because I was so into Harry Potter. I was like, I was so into Harry Potter. I was like, I could never possibly like Twilight. So I never read them. Never watched. Yeah.
I was, the reason I got into it, right, is that I'm not ashamed of it, but like, I wanted to, the movie was coming out and I went through this thing, was like, I want to read the book before the movie.
Yeah.
And then it was, because I'm dyslexic, it was the first book I read in a week, which not common for me. It used to take me back 3 months to a year to read a book. And I just zoomed through it. And I know it's simply written. I'm aware that you're literally, you know, the people who are all like, oh, it's not well written.
Yeah.
I'm like, but for me, I just got really sucked in. And then I loved the hot, because I'm, you know, vampires were cool. I just got obsessed. Not that big fan of the movies, but yeah, the books, yeah, love them.
I never read them.
Yeah. You're not missing out.
I feel like I am, but I can't buy anything anymore.
No.
That was a thing with Harry Potter. I've never watched Game of Thrones or read, because I can't afford to like something new.
Oh, yeah.
The memorabilia.
Yeah.
I went crazy with Harry Potter.
Wow.
I had everything.
Really?
Yeah. And I had no money. I think back and I used to work. I had a job really young.
Mm.
I'd spend all my paycheck on memorabilia.
See, I was probably like that with the Spice Girls.
Oh, I was too. Oh, like, my God. I was obsessed with it. I am obsessed with the Spice Girls.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Loved them. I cried when Jerry left.
Yeah.
Cried.
Well, I was too. I went to the first concert where Jerry wasn't there.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never been, because they never came to Aotearoa. They never came to the Southern Hemisphere.
Oh, wow.
So I never got to see them. Yeah. And then they performed here, I think, with Posh.
Yeah.
But I was doing my master's and I couldn't afford it because I was living in London.
Oh.
Or else I would have gone. But yeah, I've never seen them live.
I've seen them 5 times, I think.
Really?
Me and my mom are crazy. Wow. We're like really, really, because it was my first concert.
Mm.
And when they did their reunion tour in 2007, we went, I got front row tickets. And they came to San Jose.
Oh my God.
And then we went to LA as well. And my mom still makes fun of me because the first half of the concert I was crying.
Wow.
Yeah.
I would, my 12-year-old self would, like, my 12-year-old self is so jealous right now.
I was obsessed.
Obsessed.
And the week before the concert, I dressed up as a Spice Girl every different day of the week at school.
Wow.
And I told everyone, like, you guys, this is Spice Week. No one dressed up. I was like, everyone, Monday, it's Sporty Spice. And no one did it. But I was, I mean, for Posh Spice, I wore heels to high school.
Wow.
So embarrassing in hindsight. But I was so obsessed.
So much. Who was your fave?
I loved Posh Spice, but I do think the perfect, I always thought my perfect version of myself is to be 1/5 of all of them.
Wow, that's a good answer.
Yeah,
I was ginger all the way.
Okay, yeah, her leaving still hurts. It really hurts. Like, it was really hard to see her at the reunion ones because there was a bit of, and also the ones where Posh wasn't there was a bit the sass. This, like, because we came to London to see her, to see them.
Yeah.
In their tour, or that, what was it, 20, was it 20?
The one without.
2016.
I think they did one in 2018 without.
Because it was when I, 2019 maybe? No, it was 2019.
2019, yeah.
Because it was the year I graduated, and I almost missed my graduation because of the, it was either that or, but then they added more dates, which was really nice. But yeah, so the sass that Jerry gave was, I didn't love that.
Yeah.
The sipping the tea at Victoria's part. I just felt that to be a bit rude.
Yeah.
Because I think she had every reason to not do something, whereas Jerry's the one who left.
Yeah, exactly. And like, also, the thing that made the Spice Girls very special was, unlike other girl groups, all five of them sang.
Yeah.
They all had their own identity and they were all about girl power. And it was such a revolution at yes. the time
yeah.
for us to see five women being themselves, even though they were put into a box and maybe right. that box wouldn't be right today. But back then we needed that. Whereas other girl groups had the one singer and then the rest were pretty much backup singers or backup dancers. Yeah. They weren't.
Yeah.
And you just knew, like, you know, the Pussycat Dolls is a perfect example. You only know right. Nicole. I wouldn't even be able to name the others.
Yeah.
Which is a shame.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. God, I love the Spice Girls. My Spice Girls collection is still.
Yeah.
I guess when I was home last month and I was just looking at my Spice. I still have boxes of lollipops.
Oh my God, the Jubba Chubs.
Yeah.
The stickers. I don't even know where my Spice Girl stuff is.
You gotta find it. It's worth valuable.
Oh, it's so worth stuff now. Yeah. Well. I think like chatting about the Spice Girls is a great, great way to end this podcast. Yeah. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Oh my God, I'm going to go listen to Spice Girls now.
Yes.
I'm so obsessed.
Who do you think you are? Say you'll be their favorite.
Ooh. You know what? I always like, I really like Holler sometimes.
Oh, yeah. That album actually is quite good.
Yeah. It depends on my mood. Always mood.
Yeah. There's some classics like Never Give Up, which never made it to the radio. It was a good song. Saturday Night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
God. Yeah. Their Christmas songs as well.
Yeah.
Some of their Christmas songs are really nice.
Yeah. Ah, God. Some bangers.
Good times.
I'm
going to go listen now.
Cool.